is Tuesday, March 12th, and in 3 days, this Friday, it will be 5 years since the horrific terrorist attacks in Christchurch on March 15. And so today, that's all we'll be focusing on. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is What's Worth Talking About. Two community leaders join us to discuss the ongoing trauma 5 years on, whether or not enough progress has been made around national security, but also harassment, and they reveal the level of public support received since the attacks. We're also asking what the current government's commitments are to the recommendations that still need to be acted on from the Royal Commission of Inquiry into the attacks. All that is coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
It seems hard to believe that it's been 5 years since the horrific terrorist attack on the Christchurch mosques. 51 people were killed in the terrorist assault on the 15th of March 2019, and many, many more were injured at both the Al Noor Mosque and Linwood Islamic Centres. Joining us now is Abdul Razak, the coordinator of events to mark this anniversary for the Federation of Islamic Associations of New Zealand. Abdul, thank you for being here.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Kia ora. Nice to be here.
How does the community prepare for a day with such painful memories?
So many people who were affected in Christchurch and, of course, nationally as well as internationally. Don't forget the whanau of all the survivors of the Shahada and the bullet wounded and the other wounded. This is an ongoing trauma, and this is a particularly important one in the sense that this year it's also March 15th, is also a Friday. It was a Friday, that fateful day. And it also falls at the time of Ramadan. Everybody approaches this individually. I mean, each individual, each family member approaches in different way. And I've talked to a number of people of that. What we are trying to do from the Federation is to highlight three particular messages. The first message was to remember the aroha, that the wider community, and that's the best word we can use, you know, it's more powerful than love. The aroha that the wider community and, you know, showed to the Muslim community. And let's not forget that this could have happened to any community. It happened to us. It could have happened to a women's refuge. It could have happened to a Jewish synagogue somewhere, but it happened to us. So the second thing is that we need to understand what we can do as a nation, as not just as a Muslim community, as a nation, to prevent future things like this happening again. And there are a number of work which is going on. And the third, very important, is that we remember this day, not just for the tragedy, but also the lessons we can learn for the future. So we have approached it in those three ways.
You speak of the ongoing trauma. Of course, so many families and individuals were and are so badly affected. Is help still being provided for those affected?
Look, what we can say is that the government agencies and civil society organizations and, you know, Muslim organizations are trying their best. And the needs are very varied. One of the things we've probably lacked, and it still can be done, there's never been a comprehensive needs analysis done. In fact, we at the moment, we actually don't know the total numbers of people impacted. There is no definitive baseline of numbers. So those are things that, you know, we are looking at ourselves. But yes, a lot of people are supporting, but there's a lot of work to be done. Intergenerational trauma, we're starting to see. Those children whose parents were, you know, father or mother who were killed or bullet wounded, we're seeing the impact on those children. And it's an ongoing trauma. As all the research points, it's a long term. And University of Otago is doing a study on this, a very longitudinal study. And they found out a number of factors which are impacting. First and highest amongst them is actually the financial stress. Mm. You know, when you lose somebody who was the breadwinner and also the differences between the ACC rates and the MSD rates. So all these things coming to the... But the trauma is there and it's ongoing.
The wider public support for the community that emerged after the horrific attack was spectacular and immense. Has that endured, though?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, as I reflect, you know, that was the start of the healing process. And it's a healing process which will take a long time. And the aroha that was shown, the tears that which came from, you know, people who have never even met a Muslim, the sense of love and affection that we've got from the widest community possible, that endures, yes. Those things are people cherish. And I think that's something which New Zealanders, as New Zealanders, you know, it's something unique about us.
You're also the chairperson of the association's submissions to the Royal Commission into the attack. Do you feel the commission's findings have made a real difference?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, they weren't the last words. We're still having the coroner inquiry taking place. A lot more information is coming out. But the reports were very in-depth. Of course, there are issues there as well. The 44 recommendations were absolutely aligned. If you stand back, these 44 recommendations, you can sort of put it into sort of four thematic. One is national safety. And that includes things like, you know, national security, intelligence, and all that, as well as the role of the second would be about the police, and that includes arms and licensing, as well as the police effort that is taking place for the future. Then you've got the third, which is social cohesion. And that's a very important one where we are looking at how New Zealand as a nation could work through, and, you know, working in the education space and light. And then you've also got some of the legislative things. And highest amongst that is that hate speech legislation, which at the moment is, of course, not on the table.
I appreciate, Abdur, it is impossible to speak for everyone, but what do you think are the outstanding issues that still need to be addressed? You mentioned finding out who needs support, for example.
Look, outstanding, it number one, and number one is the welfare and well-being of the Shuhada families and the victims. There still needs to be a lot more effort there. Number two, our national security area. This is an ongoing concern, and I'm talking about the whole machinery of national security. For the first time, we've got a national security strategy in New Zealand. Can you imagine a country like this not even having a national... As a result of the Royal Commission, as added value, it wasn't one of the recommendations, but we have a national security strategy. It's important that that area of investment is maintained and increased.
What would you like people to think about or remember this March 15th?
I know what I would like to think is the people to remember that we are a very diverse country, and we all have our differences, and to work with differences is the most important challenge that we have. And this challenge we can only do if we have that near. In Islam, we have a concept called intention. The intention is that we all have to learn from each other, and that's what the Quran says. For me, that's what the primary focus.
Abdur Razak from the Federation of Islamic Associations of New Zealand, thank you very much for taking the time to kōrero.
Thank you.
If you'd like to get in touch, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is newsable@staff.co.nz. One of the organisations that has pushed strongly for greater action over threats and intimidation made towards the Muslim community is the Islamic Women's Council. The national coordinator of the council is Aaliyah Danzeisen, and she joins us now. Welcome back to Newsable, Aaliyah. Nice to see you.
Kia ora. Nice to be here.
You've spoken in the past of how Muslim women and girls experience extra harassment because they're often more identifiable by what they're wearing. Has any of that improved in the last few years?
The data that the police have is showing that there's an increase, and it seems to be increasing year on year. But what's happening online, female Muslims are seeing a little bit of a reduced attention, but what's happening with the augment of hate towards other groups, we experience more hate in person as a result, because it transfers to us being identifiable and visibly identifiable because of the headscarf. So there's a transferability of hate from one group to another.
There's been times when the community has struggled to get police to take these threats seriously enough. Is that still the case?
No, I would say that the police have been quite informed on what our needs are now, and they've implemented training, so they're actually doing quite well in that space for the incoming officers to be able to identify if it's an incident of hate. And they've been working with that more diversity in more communities. So one of the areas of success, I would say, is in policing.
How do we stop these attacks, this harassment of Muslim women just simply because they're identifiable?
There's awareness. There's a need for awareness. So that's one. And to more further understanding also. And that's through conversations, but it's also through allies and people who do know our community also stepping up and speaking alongside us. The other thing is to reduce it. Online space needs to have a bit of regulation, not too much, but a bit of regulation for what is really harmful speech, that there are consequences that people aren't motivated to keep doing so.
As recently as in the past month, researchers at Auckland University have pointed to failings within the security forces here in New Zealand and in Australia to track the terrorists' online activities. Have those holes now been blocked, do we not?
No. So related to the forums where the people were interacting and the online spaces, they're still going strong. And there's a lot more areas to get in front of for people to follow. So online, there hasn't been a lot of moderation changes. Social media companies would say, yes, they have. But these forums still exist. They are pulling in because of the AI triggers. They're pulling in more people. Because like-minded people are finding like-minded people. And what happens with the communities online is that they don't get the dialogue that they would in public. If you were walking around on the street and said some of your views, other people might challenge you. But if you're in a group that only you interact online where everybody's reinforcing your hate, then it appears normal. What is good is there's an awareness and people are now talking about the impacts of shifting people, like AI shifting people to these forums. So that's good. But we do need more investment in real life interactions and in communities that are in person rather than just online.
The briefings given to new ministers in the incoming government talk of Muslim, Arab and Jewish communities, all reporting a rapidly declining sense of security. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, it's not like a normal increment. It's a big jump each year. And that's quite dangerous. When we're only 1%, I'll give you an example. Muslim women are less than 1% of the population, but we're able, based on police data, to show that 36% of daily incidents of hate are targeted to Muslim women.
Having feelings of rapidly declining sense of security surely does not make any sense given the efforts that we're told are being put into security post March 15.
Yeah, well, that's
something's not going right here, right?
That's it. Are they in front of it? The evidence is showing that they're not getting in front of it for one reason or another. And what are the reasons? And that's where, if we go back to the data that you mentioned about the University of Auckland, the university researchers have been able to find this data. And the indicators are either the security hasn't been able to find it themselves, which is what it looked like before March 15th, and even after, or they did know it and they're ignoring it. And neither one of those are good situations. We've got to have security and intelligence, their duty is to protect us. And their duty is to get in front and make sure that this nation is secure. And the indicators are they probably aren't. And not even probably aren't. I say the numbers show that they aren't.
Aliyah Danzizen from the Islamic Women's Council, thank you very much for taking the time to chat.
Thank you so much.
And Newsable did request an interview with the security agencies, but they were not available. If you haven't already, make sure you're following us wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode of Newsable, but also it'll help other people find us. So, what is the new government's position on the work recommended by the Royal Commission in its report delivered late in 2020? And is there any indication they're committed to what was proposed? Political reporter for The Post, Thomas Manch, is with us now to answer some of those questions. Thomas, how far did the previous government get with the findings?
Somewhat far is the answer, really. There were 44 recommendations. Some were easier than others, obviously. You know, there are a great many that are still in progress. I'm looking at a little diagram now, and implemented is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. About 10 are fully implemented, you know. The rest are still underway in some way, shape or form.
So then, Thomas, how do you see the current government responding to that work that still needs to be done?
So the current government has more or less said, we still agree with all the recommendations. There's a glaring exception there, which we'll get to. But by and large, they agree with their recommendations and they want to proceed. The difference is they're saying, look, it is time to wrap this up. It's been 5 years now. You know, we need to make a decision on the remainder of them, and we move forward or we don't move forward on some of them.
What are some of those key decisions that they do need to make? What is for people who might not quite be familiar with what still needs to be done?
Yeah, some of the larger recommendations included the creation of a national security agency that acts as like an umbrella sort of policy agency over top the operational agencies. There's comparable agencies in other countries provide a real strategic sort of oversight in terms of counterterrorism effort and broader national security efforts. Mm. We lack that currently in New Zealand. You've got to wonder if the government has appetite to build a whole new agency at this point, you know, given the way things have been going. Mm. There are other things in there too. The hate speech question is a big one. So that's something this government has said we will not be doing. We will not be pursuing hate speech legislation. That's going to really stick as an issue for the community.
After the attack, semi-automatic weapons were banned. It now appears that that may be reversed. The minister in charge for that is ACT's Nicole McKee. She declined a request to speak with Newsable this week. But how much does it appear that the March 15 attacks are being considered when it comes to any potential gun law changes?
It's a real change in the politics on this issue. You know, we saw it coming through the election, and we saw even when National was, they were softening on the issue. The way the government's been pursuing this is they are saying that this is not a reverse of the ban because it was never a full ban of these weapons anyway. We are interested in maybe opening up access to sport shooters, you know. And National at the time said, after March 15, said that maybe sport shooters should be carved out of what is effectively a ban of semi-automatic weapons. So we're going to see this issue be pursued by the government. Where it lands will be really interesting to see. You got to wonder what the broader public feedback will be. There was a lot of buy-in. Mm. You know, the whole parliament, except one vote, agreed with the effective ban on semi-automatic weapons after the attack. And yeah, it is a relitigation now, 5 years on, a relitigation of this issue that's a politically hard needle to thread.
Is there any thought in terms of further support for the community as well, who were so deeply and badly affected by all of this?
The briefing that Judith Collins received, who's the minister responsible for the overall response to the inquiry, the briefing she received late last year spoke of restorative justice. It didn't make clear what that meant in this context, but talking to some people, restorative justice could mean compensation. So where that goes is also another matter to be resolved.
Political reporter for The Post, Thomas Manch, really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Friday, we'll see a number of events take place across the Motu to mark the anniversary too, including one in Christchurch on Friday night involving families and those injured, along with community representatives from around the country. Politicians from all parties in Parliament are expected to be there as well, and many of the first responders from that day in 2019. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Hei kona rā. Thank you for listening.
Newsable, news that's worth talking about. If you liked it and reckon it's also worth supporting, please make a contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.